Thanks for downloading Health Talk by TriHealth, a monthly podcast to help you take charge of your own healthcare and live a healthier, happier life. This is episode 25, and today's topic is breast cancer. I'm Tom Tumbush. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, an annual campaign to increase knowledge and understanding of the disease, headed up by the American Cancer Society and other major breast cancer charities. Now, according to those folks, 1 in 8 women in the United States will develop breast cancer in her lifetime. That makes breast cancer one of the most common forms of cancer that affects American women, second only to skin cancers. On average, a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer every 2 minutes, and while it's very rare, men can get breast cancer too. About 64% of breast cancer cases are diagnosed before the cancer begins to spread to other parts of the body. When it's discovered that early, the success rate for treatment is fairly high. But when the cancer starts to spread, what's called metastatic breast cancer, it's a far more serious concern. Joining me remotely today to help us understand metastatic breast cancer and the options available to treat it are Dr. Amy Jackson, a medical oncologist at the TriHealth Cancer Institute who specializes in breast cancer care, and Jean Bode, one of her current patients. Dr. Jackson, Jean, welcome to Health Talk.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Dr. Jackson, I'd like you to start by telling our listeners what metastatic breast cancer is and how it differs from what's called localized breast cancer.
Sure. Metastatic breast cancer means a cancer that has started in the breast, but it has migrated or moved from the breast tissue into another organ. So typically that happens either through spread to the lymph nodes and then out through the bloodstream, or direct spread into the bloodstream. And then the seeds of breast cancer are able to establish ground in another organ, commonly in the liver, the bones, or the lungs, but really in any other organ. And when that happens, in general, that cancer is not curable, although it is often controllable with therapies that are used to keep the cancer cells in check.
So when the cancer metastasizes in that way, what are some of the symptoms that a patient might experience?
Sure. So when we have a patient who has a history of breast cancer, often we counsel them to look for symptoms that could indicate cancer spread. And the things that I typically want a patient to look out for would be any symptom that's persisting. So it's, you know, something that is lasting several weeks or longer. It's worsening, meaning that it's, you know, continuing to get worse over that period of time. And then it's not otherwise explained. So when we think about things like, you know, colds or viral infections, muscle sprains, muscle strains. You know, we often get symptoms of these transient illnesses that then, you know, will get better on their own within a couple of weeks. But if a patient with a history of cancer has a symptom that isn't getting better on its own, then that's something that they should get checked out by their doctor. And so, you know, for example, if a cancer, you know, moves into the lung, sometimes that can present with a cough that is continuing and not resolving. If it moves into the bones, sometimes it presents with a pain that's not getting better. So the symptom can vary depending on where those cancer seeds settle or land. But in general, we're looking for something that's persisting and worsening, and that can be our first clue that there could be involvement by cancer.
Thank you. Jean, how did you find out that you had breast cancer initially?
Well, my first diagnosis was in August of 2017, and it was, and I have a very strong family history of breast cancer, so I have been pretty aggressive for a very long time. You know, mammograms and MRIs and seeing breast specialists, etc.
Good.
But I, in self-exams, of course. And I actually had a clean mammogram in May, and then around June, I felt kind of, I called it a lump, or a hump, on my left side. And just kind of kept an eye on it for a few weeks and then called my breast specialist and got in to see her, who did a biopsy. And that tumor was very near my chest wall, which is why it felt more like a hump than a lump, because it, by the time I felt it. So I did a year of treatments and surgeries and such, and then have continued just to be under care of my oncologist and breast specialist, again, just being very responsive to that. But in March of this year, I just started having some discomfort kind of across my chest area and underneath my arm, which I thought was related to lymphedema, which is what I had, just some swelling in my arm. And my husband actually just one morning just said, why don't you just call, you know, my breast specialist, just call her and see. And so as I was explaining my symptoms to her, she's the one who scheduled a scan and then found out that it had metastasized to my lymph nodes and both my lungs. So that was in April of this year.
So your original diagnosis wasn't metastatic breast cancer?
No, my original diagnosis was not. It was just localized in my left side, in my left breast.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that you had a family history of cancer. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. So I am actually one of five sisters, and three of us have had breast cancer. My youngest sister, or the youngest who had breast cancer, was actually diagnosed at the age of 25. And she passed away, sadly, at the age of 29.
But I'm sorry to hear that.
That was in the year 2000. So, you know, over the 20 years, there have been so many more advancements and aggressiveness ways to treat cancer since that time. She was very young. Not a lot of young people at that time had been diagnosed. So the treatments, I know, look a lot different now. And then my older sister had a very early stage of breast cancer, and she is doing very well now.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, in situations like this where you have a family history, one of the things that we have now that we probably didn't have when your sister first was diagnosed is the role of genetic testing has definitely increased considerably. Dr. Jackson, how does genetic testing come into play in cases of metastatic breast cancer?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there are a proportion of breast cancers, both localized and metastatic, that are found in higher concentrations in certain families. And so there are certain criteria that we use to recommend genetic testing for women when they're diagnosed with breast cancer. And so we often think of women who either are diagnosed at an early age, so younger than the age of 50, or have a family member diagnosed younger than the age of 50, if there's multiple family members who are affected with breast cancer, or if there are other associated cancers in the family that also sort of raise a red flag for a genetic predisposition. So that could be, you know, a person who's diagnosed with breast cancer who also has a family history of ovarian cancer, or someone who also has a, you know, family history of pancreatic cancer. These are red flags that often trigger genetic counseling and genetic testing for that family. However, in recent years, it's been identified that for certain women with HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer.
Could you tell our listeners what that is?
Yes. So there are three basic subtypes of receptors that we look for in a person who's diagnosed with breast cancer. So we're looking for women who have estrogen-fed types of breast cancer. So those are women who have estrogen receptor positive or progesterone receptor positive breast cancer. There's another subset of cancers which are called HER2 positive breast cancers, and this is a specific pathway that is turned on in certain breast cancers. It represents about 15% of breast cancers, and it's a more rapid growing type of breast cancer, and then there are triple negative breast cancers. So for women who have a HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer, so one that does not express an excess number of HER2 receptors, there are specific treatments that may be utilized in the metastatic setting that are aimed at women targeting the gene mutation that can be found in these women. So there, in recent years, has been a change to the genetic testing guidelines. So we still follow the previous criteria based on family history and age of diagnosis to recommend genetic testing for women with localized breast cancer. But it's now recommended that women, that all women with a metastatic breast cancer diagnosis undergo genetic testing. And that's because even in the absence of family history, if we were to identify a gene mutation, that opens up a potential additional targeted treatment that they might be a candidate for.
Gotcha. Thanks for clarifying that. Sure. Now, so it sounds like genetic testing was something that you recommended in Jean's case, since she fell into that category.
Yes, definitely. With that family history, that would have, kind of flagged genetic testing, in that setting.
I would add, as far as the genetic testing, like, my family has had multiple. Anytime there's like a new panel available for genetic testing, all of my sisters and my mom have continued. And at this point, they've not identified any specific gene within our family. But it is very important for us, because we obviously feel there's probably something out there, it's just not discovered. So we are all very involved in a lot of different studies, and always willing to kind of let our story be told, because we think somebody else's family might be out there with a similar situation. And any time we're able to kind of help the good of the whole and provide some of that sampling, we are all willing to do that, and have been. Anytime there's new panels coming up, we are getting those tests done.
I'm glad to hear you're participating in that work. That's excellent.
For our own selves and our nieces and daughters and other family members, obviously too, just for our generations, but then just for helping anybody else out there as well.
If I could just expound on that just a little bit, if you don't mind. I think, Gina, that's a really excellent point. And, there are definitely families who have clusters of cancers that are occurring more frequently than we would expect to see, and their genetic testing is negative. So I think it is important to remember that there are a lot of traits that we share that are different than just our genes. And so just because a genetic test is negative doesn't erase the family history. So for a woman who has a strong family history of breast cancer, who undergoes genetic testing, and we don't find a gene mutation, it still is important that she's continuing to, keep in mind that family history as she's planning her, her screening. So sometimes, even in the setting of a family history without a gene mutation, there might be increased screening that's recommended for that woman, despite that negative testing result. And the second point that I think is important to understand is, genetics is a relatively, new field. So it's not been that long ago that we sequenced the genome. And so, even prior to 2015, women who have had genetic testing done in that time frame, some of that testing has been really expanded upon, and we're able to test for more things than we could test for in the past. And so if we see a patient who has a history of breast cancer or another cancer that can be seen in association with an inherited condition, or who has a strong family history, and maybe they were tested in 2011, a lot of times we would recommend updating their panel testing, because we can find new mutations that we weren't able to test for in the past. So Gina, I think that's an excellent point. And I think for people with a family history, it is really important to, continue to revisit that with their physicians as the technology evolves. We expect to be able to find more and more answers for patients.
So, Dr. Jackson, let's talk about treatment. What are some of the effective ways that metastatic breast cancer can be treated? You said there's no cure, but that it can be controlled.
Yes. So, metastatic breast cancer is is an umbrella term, and we use that to describe several different diseases, all of which start in the breast but are treated very differently. And so for a hormone positive HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer, often that's treated with a combination of hormone blocking pills and a second pill that's taken at home, and those are used to shut down that estrogen pathway and stop the estrogen sensitive cells from being able to replicate. And often women can respond to that treatment for many years. Then there are other effective therapies that we're able to utilize after that. So really the goal is, I look at it as a marathon. You're kind of trying to use the first line therapy for as long as that works. And then if we start to develop some resistance to that therapy, then we move on to the next therapy and use that one as long as we can. And so, the average length of time that women with metastatic breast cancer live is measured in years. And that's because there have been a lot of advances in therapy. For women who have HER2 positive breast cancer or triple negative breast cancer, and triple negative breast cancer means that they are negative for all three receptors. So they do not have estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor, or HER2 overexpression. And so for women with either HER2 positive or triple negative breast cancer, the treatment is chemotherapy based rather than oral therapies. And we have multiple effective regimens that are available for those patients. And so really the goal is to put them on a therapy and then continue that therapy to maintain response.
Now, just following up on what you said about different therapies, we're seeing a lot of commercials these days about new drugs for metastatic breast cancer. Typically, how long could a woman stay on drugs like that?
So I think the most common commercials you're probably seeing are for the hormone positive HER2 negative breast cancer. These mm-hmm. are drugs called CDK4/6 inhibitors, which I know is a mouthful, but that's a pill that's used in combination with hormone blocking therapy. And the average length of time that a woman responds to just that first line therapy can be up to a couple of years or longer. So, and again, that's just the first therapy. So the nice thing about that therapy is that it does often give a good measure of control of the cancer, but it is something that can be taken at home. It doesn't cause some of the most, sort of noticeable physical changes that we think about with patients undergoing cancer treatment. So typically there isn't hair loss. There can be small amounts of nausea or diarrhea, but they're usually much more manageable. And so, often women can continue to, have a relatively good quality of life with the ability to, sort of not be immediately identified physically as a cancer patient, which can be important for patients. So that's been a really important advancement in estrogen positive or hormone positive HER2 negative breast cancer. But there have also been a lot of really incredible advances in HER2 positive breast cancer and also triple negative breast cancer that I'm not sure if you see commercials necessarily on them, but have been really, really exciting for those of us in the field of breast cancer treatment. And so for HER2 positive breast cancer specifically, there's really been an explosion of therapies that have been approved in the last few years, which is really exciting to see, because that means that we're helping, women continue to, live with their cancer for longer and with better therapies. And then in the triple negative setting, the biggest advance has been the introduction of immunotherapy. So there are some drugs called chemotherapies, which directly attack cancer cells. There are targeted therapies, which are used in HER2 positive breast cancers. And those are therapies that target the HER2 receptor and allow us to, to sort of highlight those cancer cells and have the therapies target them more effectively. But there's a different class of medicine called immunotherapy, and that type of therapy allows a person's immune system to attack the cancer cells. And so a relatively new advance in triple negative breast cancer has been identifying women for whom their cancers respond to better to a combination of immunotherapy with chemotherapy. And there's now a trial looking to see if we can bring that treatment to the HER2 positive setting as well. So lots of really exciting advances that have been improving outcomes for our patients with metastatic breast cancer, which is very, very exciting.
It sounds like everything's improving all the time. Yes. That is really exciting to hear. Jean, I'd like to hear a little bit about what your treatment journey was like. How did that go for you?
Well, the first time around, I had I had a big treatments of chemotherapy to start, and then I had a double mastectomy with reconstruction, and then I was on another chemotherapy because I at the time was HER2 positive and estrogen positive, so mm-hmm. I continued with a chemotherapy for a year after that for the HER2 part of it. And then now I just actually finished week 24 of 24 weeks yesterday.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was a big day. And to be able, my goal at the start was to be able to stay, keep my body healthy enough each week to be able to get back in there and get every drop of that medicine I possibly could. And seeing definitely positive results with the treatments I've gotten so far. And then next week I start kind of like my phase two of continuing mm-hmm. on with some of the chemotherapies. And then also I'm in a clinical trial. So I will be getting those medicines every 3 weeks for a while. So that's where I am currently.
Well, we wish you the best of luck with the remainder of your treatment.
Thank you.
Because it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, I do have one final question that I'd actually like to ask both of you. And Jean, I'll start with you. What would you like other women to know about breast cancer and the process of treating it?
Wow, that's a big question. I think first and foremost is people just really have to pay attention to their brains and their body. You know, I think for me, even though I had all the screenings, I was seeing my doctors both times, I was the one who kind of identified something wasn't quite right with my body. And both times I still kind of even waited a few weeks just to see, even though this last time I should have, you know, I could have been like right away jumping to it, but I still didn't. I was still a little hesitant, but I not even hesitant, just kind of didn't get around to it. Just thought, oh, it'll get better. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, your brain and your body is pretty smart together, and we really have to pay attention to that. And I think sometimes thinking beyond just, it wasn't about me, thinking about, you know, my husband's wife and my children's mother, that's who I need to take care of that person too. So I think sometimes thinking beyond yourself, like who are you doing this for, is really important to make sure you're taking care of your body for that respect. I do 100% have to share about the importance of the support systems and asking for help and not being quiet or keeping something back. I think one of the reasons why I was able to get through these 24 weeks this time was any little thing that I felt, I was able to talk to Dr. Jackson about, and there was always a solution to whatever it was. So I could still continue to get the medication that's going to help me, along with my faith and prayers and the amount of people and support that I have around me, and sharing my story with people as well, and being open and honest with the people around me has been made this a lot easier for me. So I don't feel so alone. And just being as honest as I possibly can with my medical team and then my family and friends who are around me has been so important.
Dr. Jackson, how about you? What would you like women to know more about when it comes to breast cancer and breast cancer treatment?
So I think to echo some of what Jean highlighted, I think one of the biggest things that you can do is just be aware of your body, what's normal for you, and bring to your doctor's attention anything that isn't seeming normal. And then the other thing is really making sure that you are, you know, up on your routine cancer screenings and talking to your doctor.
Annual mammogram.
Exactly. When's the right time, you know, to start getting annual mammograms. And, you know, sometimes that is different based on a family history. So it might start earlier if there's breast cancer in your family. You know, women with younger, who are younger, you know, should be getting 3D mammograms, which are a better diagnostic technique than the standard 2D mammograms, which are older technology. And so making sure that you are, you know, not just getting, you know, that screening done, but also doing your own self breast exams and, you know, letting your doctor know if there's anything that you're, you know, concerned about, getting your colonoscopy, you know, at the appropriate age, making sure you're up to date with your pelvic exams, understanding, you know, what your risk for lung cancer is. And if you're a smoker, you know, should you be undergoing screening for lung cancer. So I think this is a conversation that that every patient should have with their doctor, and it takes into account, you know, their age, their personal risk factors, but also their family history. And so having that conversation with your healthcare provider is very important.
Well, Dr. Jackson and Jean, thank you so much for joining us on Health Talk today and for sharing your expertise and experiences with us.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Health Talk by TriHealth, where leading local care professionals help you to stay up to date on proactive healthcare strategies and to live a healthier lifestyle. New episodes of Health Talk by TriHealth are released on the first Tuesday of every month. I hope you'll join us next time. You can listen to Health Talk online at trihealth.com or search for Health Talk by TriHealth on SoundCloud, Apple iTunes, or your favorite podcast source. This is Tom Tumbush. Thanks for listening. This podcast is intended for informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon to make a diagnosis or for treatment purposes, and this podcast does not create a physician-patient relationship. Please consult your healthcare provider or contact TriHealth to make an appointment if medical attention is needed. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individuals interviewed and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of TriHealth or any of its affiliates. This podcast is the copyrighted work of TriHealth, which owns the exclusive rights thereto. Unauthorized use, copying, and dissemination are illegal. Copyright 2020, TriHealth. All rights reserved.